The one of the problems, or the restrictions of being an entrepreneur, is that you can't come up with an idea that's bigger than the entity you're in.
We rightly celebrate the struggles of startups and their brave founders, but it can be tough working in a bigger company too, where powerful corporate antibodies seek and destroy new ideas that don't conform to the conventional culture. But some leaders battle the status quo inside their own companies to innovate and drive change. These are the serial entrepreneurs, and this is their story.
My name is Aaron Pethian, and I am the Marketplace Director for Temenos.
So what does a Marketplace Director do?
I guess on a day-to-day basis, it means that I run the business unit called Marketplace. It's Temenos's platform initiative. I am a technology kind of guy, and I now do the P&L for the marketplace. That's Marketplace Director in a nutshell.
Well, what is the Temenos Marketplace all about? What's the strategy?
Right. So Marketplace is about connecting banks with the fintechs. And generally, I think the fintechs need a route to market. Marketplace provides that service to the fintechs, and then the banks need a way to innovate faster. So it's that platform initiative of connecting the two.
And how long has this initiative been in place?
I guess 2 years now. It probably started a little bit before that, actually. I've been with Temenos 11 years this year, and I've been in numerous technology roles, in API, product management type roles. And this vision probably started 6 years ago, really, where everyone was looking at the likes of Apple and App Store and the platform, as everyone knows the platform business model today. Over time, it's kind of turned into the marketplace, and there's probably another 5 years of vision from here to where we want to be.
Well, that was pretty early, 6 years ago, at least in banking years.
Yeah, probably as a technology guy, you can see that things are possible a long time before all of the other pieces fall into place. And probably there's a few people internally who are occasionally, we have a bit of a chat, and there's a bit of a pat on the back moment when they're like, you're finally getting there with that big idea. We have a kind of internal conference where this was one of the things that I floated all those years ago, and it's all happening. It's, like you said, a pretty long time in the banking world.
Did you see the standard adoption curve, even in a tech company where you had some people that got it right away and maybe others that you had to convince and convert along the way?
Yeah, if you sort of take the hype curve that everyone talks about, it's exactly the same internally. It starts out with a few people who get it, and you're kind of early adopters, and you essentially have to market and go to market internally to get everyone's buy-in. And initially, there'll be a number of people who say, well, that's a crazy idea, and sort of write it off as a crazy idea. But over time, if you have a few crazy ideas actually start to happen and come off, you get a bit more support. So I guess that is exactly what happened. They get that kind of hype and adoption, and over time it becomes sort of a normal product and something productive.
So is that you? Are you a crazy idea guy?
I guess good question. I'm probably one of the people who's more comfortable with change. They don't tend to be just crazy ideas for crazy ideas' sake. They tend to be through my own experience of technology and what's possible and what we're not doing yet. And actually, I think one of the more uncomfortable parts about being, let's say, a crazy idea guy, is that you can see things probably 2-3 years ahead of what the organization's capable of, and that sort of brings its own challenges.
So have you always been that way, kind of forward thinking and connecting dots that maybe other people aren't seeing?
I don't really think of myself that way. I tend to think of myself as a kind of more hard work and persistence and the kind of graft guy. If it's too far-fetched, I'll quickly rule it out as just something that's far-fetched and not worth doing. But maybe I've been a bit that way since the beginning of time, yeah.
But grounded in a sense of feasibility, and maybe that's partly coming from your technology background.
Yeah, I think you've probably got to go further back than that, actually. If you look at a person, their career is a tiny snapshot of what they're doing. I grew up in Australia, was born in New Zealand, have a sort of, a practical background. So all of the ideas tend to be from that practical basis.
Well, I always use the working definition of innovation is it's new ideas that are implemented that create value. And I think a lot of people get the new ideas part, and they love those sessions where you write stuff on the whiteboard and move post-it notes around the wall, but they end up becoming kind of unsatisfied after a while because nothing ever comes from those sessions because there's usually not an appropriate structure and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think about innovation as, you know, good ideas that actually create value. And so that kind of reminds me of what you're talking about, coming from this perspective of practicality and feasibility and usability. Is that kind of embedded in the culture at Temenos?
You know, the Temenos story is pretty astounding. And there are lots of innovators and people making things happen. And it's a very organic kind of organization. Yeah, there's a lot going on at any one time. I think the whole approach there that you talk about with innovation, you know, I totally agree. Essentially, invention, I think, is the first part of what you mentioned. But actually turning it into a product and, you know, figuring out the market and taking it to market is the innovation part. And a few people internally have jokingly said, you know, I'm head of innovation, or I'm head of kind of innovative side of the company, with things like the innovation jams and marketplace and lots of products taking them to market. But I think that is kind of in Temenos's DNA. You know, it's there throughout the company, and lots of people are looking for those opportunities. In the corporate world, you know, if you think about Temenos moving into kind of the corporate zone of big company, there's people who are optimizing, there's people who are creating, and there's probably everyone in between. Definitely Temenos is sort of more at the, you know, creating and you know, innovation side of the spectrum.
So without naming names, but every company, particularly as you grow, you have those people. And first of all, sometimes it's in their job, right? It might be compliance or legal or procurement or something like that. But there are the people that at their worst, I call them the business prevention department. I mean, you must have some of that, right? Everybody can't just embrace everything and go forth and implement new ideas every day, right?
Absolutely. I think anyone in any business has exactly the same situation. And I have tons of respect for them. I know they're trying to make our operations risk-free. And I know they're trying to achieve an objective. I think for me, and probably a lot of other innovators, the challenge is that our goals are completely diametrically opposed to those, you know, risk kind of or control type departments, in your legal or maybe it's HR or maybe it's the process optimization group. Or essentially, we want change and they don't want change. And at the heart of it, we want change because there's a new opportunity. There's an acceptable risk. There's a reward or a return on that, on taking that risk.
Well, how do you manage that tension between the two?
I guess for me personally, I take a good look at what I'm challenging them with. And if it's practical to do it their way, let's say the controlled way, I'll do it, you know, if the cost is not too great. If it's not practical, I think it's perfectly acceptable with the right intent to go around them. And, you know, that kind of innovator and disruptor kind of people, they go together because of that reason. You know, you are comfortable with going around the roadblocks if that's how they're presenting themselves.
Have you ever made anybody mad by going around them?
Oh dear, the list is long. The list is very, very long.
You have a long enemies list?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't think of them as enemies. And, you know, over time, you know, a long time in the company, you tend to have patches with different people that where you've, for the right reason, you know, clashed swords, or, you know, you've come up against them. But it's not, I think after a while they realize that the intent was right, but, you know, you do build up a long list of people that are challenged by your ideas or your actions, or I think that's perfectly normal, actually. And sometimes there are people who encourage it in the organization. That gives you strength and courage, actually.
Besides just winning the battle, do you think you've changed anybody over the long run? Has somebody that maybe disagreed with you have come around to not only that micro decision, but kind of maybe having a better perspective of the way you approach things?
I think almost universally, anyone who might have been, you know, upset at the time has come around. And, you know, I like to be a guy who's a you know, liked and, you know, able to work with people. And I suppose everyone realizes what was meant at the time, or it was, let's say it was just business, or you were just trying to achieve something. I don't think there's any people who are left, you know, out in the cold or wondering, you know, whether it was personal in some way. No.
So maybe now or maybe in a prior job, we talked a little bit about this already, but that crazy idea person, did you ever have a new idea that people could not get their head around and it ended up failing or not launching?
One of the benefits of being in technology, one of the people in Temenos that I know quite well, he talks about technology has no physics or you make your own physics. To me, there is nothing that is impossible. So I had a one crazy idea in particular that just sort of keeps coming back, but eventually will happen, I think, is that we could do our whole end of day operations in 2 seconds. And to put that in context, at the time it was taking 12 hours. So to turn that into 2 seconds seemed an unbelievable feat of engineering, or just the impossible. But that was pre-cloud, that was pre-enormous scale, that was pre-in-memory databases, that was pre-like loads of technology that is bound to occur. And so that will happen, not very long in the future, actually. So those crazy predictions in technology, it tends to be inevitable that they will come to pass.
Over time, they became less and less crazy, for sure.
Mm, yeah, for sure.
So who inspires you?
There's a list of people that I kind of look at and I take bits of. But generally, the kind of people that we know and recognize, I like the engineer types. So, the Dysons of the world or the Elon Musks of the world, I like the guys who are being the leader, being the CEO, and they're actually engineers at heart. I think that's just awesome.
So you like people that build things?
Yeah, definitely. I like to play with business models. I like business in general. As a technology guy, that's probably fairly rare. But actually, someone who creates something and, turns the impossible into physically possible, they get my respect.
Were you that way as a kid? Did you like playing with Lego and the Rector sets and those sorts of toys?
Well, I suppose you have to, my child is probably a little bit strange to most people. Where I grew up was in a small country town in Queensland. That was 10 kilometers from the small country town, actually. So my Lego was building bikes or working on motorbikes or fixing things or building my own rockets, literally from scratch. This is pre-internet, you can imagine. So, I certainly had Lego and I loved things like that. But, my experience of building things was, using a welder at age 10 or doing things that are really what people think of as building things.
What did you study at university?
I was homeschooled. I went to a college, and at college I studied PC and network support, but I don't have a degree. So I've come a long way since that beginning and into programming and software. And personally, I've hired lots of people with and without degrees. And I think the university experience added a lot to their life in general. But if someone has a thirst for knowledge, I don't really think they need a degree. That's probably, a recognition of effort rather than a kind of essential when I'm looking at hiring someone.
So how did you get all of your technical training?
I started with PC and kind of networks and computers, and I guess building those computers is the way it started. And I always wanted to be a programmer. Oddly enough, at a very young age, I didn't even know what a programmer was, but I kind of wanted to be one. And my first job was a programming job on what we call green screens, graphics, just literally text and writing, ERP kind of sales or entry type systems. So I guess since then has been continuous self-education or through normal, work environment kind of new projects. And I think there's really, if you have the desire to find out, there's nothing stopping someone.
What's been the most challenging technical skill to learn?
It's probably the thinking bit, actually. There's a colleague recently who I hired into a product management type role, and he went from a very operational, hands-on type role. And the whole idea that doing nothing and thinking is being productive was hugely challenging for him. And I think that is probably the skill that in a technical role, a lot of people have to grasp, and the whole logic side of it. And there are endless stories of people waking up in the middle of the night with the solution to the problem. And I used to just love that, like day after day. You try and find a problem at the end of the day that you just can't solve at the time, but you go to sleep and you wake up and you've got the solution. So I think that, you know, by far the most challenging skill is just the logic.
So do you like to solve problems by yourself or with a team?
I've enjoyed both. I've got a kick out of both. I guess, you know, more problems solved with sort of independent thought. I suppose that's probably more my natural style.
Well, when you look back on your career path, are there things you wish you would have done differently?
You know, I don't spend a lot of time looking back. The question has been sort of put to me before, and I don't really regret anything. I don't wish I'd done anything differently. There have been points that I wish I had taken a bit more of a business focus earlier, because as a technical role, it's easy to become, you know, pigeonholed almost into being technical. Just because you can do it and you really understand it doesn't mean that that's your strength. And so I suppose the one thing I wish, you know, thinking back across the whole career is just to take on more of the business side earlier and have stuck with it. I think I've come around to find a really good spot now where that is the primary focus and not just being the technical guy.
So where do you think you go from here?
I think, you know, the whole podcast is about entrepreneurship and creating new things in an organization. I think it's logical that at some point that will be external. I'm very motivated by the whole idea of creating company, and a company within a company is still a great challenge. I think that's a logical step at some point. And what I'm working on right now has enormous potential, and, you know, I want to find out whether this will reach its full potential and whether it will work. And it's certainly a compelling thing to be working on right now. But I think, you know, eventually there'll be an external, there'll be a, you know, director, then a board, and, you know, a position where I'm actually seeding new ideas rather than being the kind of executor and creator of those ideas.
You bring up a good point. Do you think anyone can be a permanent entrepreneur, or do they all eventually end up being entrepreneurs?
Eventually, they all end up being entrepreneurs. And I suppose the reason I think that now is that everyone has a boss, whether you're inside a company or outside a company. The mechanics of finding investment change. One of the problems, or, you know, the restrictions of being an entrepreneur is that you can't come up with an idea that's bigger than the entity you're in. You know, that's you can come up with an idea that's bigger, but actually the organization might, through its own defense mechanisms, kill off your idea. That's what you probably have to go outside to create the big ideas, which naturally get bigger over time. The person who creates ideas finds bigger and bigger ideas.
You might be right about that. So what advice do you have for other entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs?
I think, you know, generally go for it. Probably there's a huge void in people willing to have a go and try things. I think they should, anyone who's inside an organization and has great ideas, just do it. Just get on with it. Just try it. Probably accept there's going to be some rocky paths on the way. But fundamentally, you're in a company, safe. There's a lot of benefit to doing.
Yeah, I think that's true. Anything else you want to talk about that I didn't ask you?
Yeah, there's tens of stories anyone could tell, but you know, I think we've pretty much covered it. You know, there was one thing in particular. You gave me a list of questions beforehand to sort of give me an idea of what we might discuss.
Yes.
And one of them was, what podcasts do I listen to? And when I looked at it, there's only two podcasts. I don't really do the whole podcast thing, but there was two podcasts on my phone. One was Breaking Banks, and it's a good series. And the other one was, I have no idea where it came from, was The Titanic and the Risk of Safety. And it was just such a, to me, I was laughing out loud on the flight, because there's these big companies, they think they're so safe. And yeah, this is what, you know, the entrepreneur has to offer, is that whole life raft from the big corporate if it doesn't work out. And we all know about the busters and, you know, the kind of Nokia moment. That's the entrepreneur's dream, is to, you know, be the life raft for the big corporate.
I think that's the perfect place to leave us. Aaron, thank you for being on Serial Entrepreneur.
Thank you very much.
I'm JP Nichols. This has been the Serial Entrepreneur podcast. If you like the show, please give it a 5-star rating. That really helps other people discover it. You can also learn more and support this and all the other great podcasts from Provoke Media at provoke.fm.